Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
This is a CBC Podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Art. An estimated 6.5 million Canadians don't have a family doctor or nurse practitioner. That's according to research by the Our Care Initiative. Like most provinces, Newfoundland and Labrador is struggling to provide primary care to the growing number of unattached patients who live there. People like Doreen Payne, who lives with her husband in Grand Falls, Windsor. They lost their family doctor at the start of the pandemic when he moved back to South Africa.
So all during COVID, we were without a doctor. And sometimes you can get pretty desperate because, like, I have an autoimmune disease, so does my husband, and we had no primary health care. And of course, the emergency room was just packed all the time. Like, at one point in a 2-day period, I had waited 22 hours to see a doctor. But the services just weren't available here. Already so many doctors had left.
But there is an alternative for people like Doreen and her husband. It's called Teladoc Health Canada, and it provides virtual primary care and, where needed, virtual ER care. When Doreen had a chest infection in January, she decided to give it a try.
I got up here one morning and I said, you know what? I said, I just can't go to emerge and sit there 11 or 12 hours again. I just can't do that. And my husband spoke up and he said, well, what about that Teladoc you registered for? And I said, you're right. I'm going to try that. Oh, my world. I sat on the Chesterfield in my living room and I hit the button on my iPad. And immediately, there was questions coming across the screen asking me questions, right? So I was put in a waiting room and it amazed me actually. And within 2 minutes, I was talking to a beautiful doctor, face-to-face, lovely lady. And I told her I was from Newfoundland. She said, oh yeah, I am licensed for Newfoundland. So we chatted and she asked me what was wrong. I told her everything. And within 2 hours, I had a prescription. She had sent the prescription to my drugstore. My husband had gone and picked it up. So within 2 hours, I was, you know, on medication. Now, she did say to me, if this doesn't work for you, within 5 days, you need to go to Emerge. But of course, the medication she gave me worked, so that was good.
Teladoc Health Canada's parent company, Teladoc Health, is a publicly traded company based in the U.S. Its Canadian branch provides virtual primary care to 9 million Canadians. The Newfoundland and Labrador government signed a 2-year, $22 million deal to provide virtual primary care providers, MDs and nurse practitioners, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Monday to Friday. And in select rural parts of Newfoundland and Labrador, Teladoc also provides a virtual ER 24 hours per day, 7 days per week. We'll get to that a bit later. We're telling this story because the doctors who are seeing Newfoundland and Labrador residents are based in other provinces. They don't fly in to provide in-person care. They see patients virtually from the provinces where they work. Doctors like Cal Bergen, a physician at Victoria General Hospital in Winnipeg.
You know, when Teladoc first contacted me, to be really candid, I wasn't super interested because I'm a strong supporter of the public system. I do not believe in a two-tiered system where your socioeconomic status gives you more rapid access to care or to better care. But this is the government of Newfoundland and Labrador saying, what we're doing isn't working. We need to do something innovative. Would you help us do it? So I consider myself working for the government of Newfoundland and Labrador. I'm a strong and proud Canadian with a Canadian medical license serving Canadian people in one of our provinces. And that makes me feel good at the end of the day.
Dr. Bergen describes how the system works.
Just the other day, I worked on my time. It's 5:30 in the morning till 1:30 in the afternoon. So it's kind of 8 to 4 Newfoundland time. And just before the shift, I get an email saying which of the sites in Newfoundland I will be responsible for that day. Newfoundland is now, they've asked us to work with them as far as adding capacity to their ER programs. And so we provide access to the sites that need us at any given time. So when I log on, I know which sites I'm working with. I touch base with the medical personnel on the ground. My knowledge of my role in the bigger picture is not always great. What I would know at the beginning of a shift is if I am solo coverage for the facility or secondary coverage, it's virtually always solo coverage. So there is no other physician on site there during this particular shift. Sometimes there's someone in the community, but can't work 24 hours a day. Often there's no one there. I wondered whether there would be some friction or animosity that someone is coming in from the outside. I can't speak for the other doctors. I'm sure their experience has been the same, but I have been welcomed and embraced as part of the medical team in Newfoundland. And so when a patient comes in, you know, they're rapidly triaged. I'm contacted. I come in together with the medical personnel on site. We evaluate. We stabilize vitally. I had a patient perhaps 6 weeks ago that came in with a cardiac arrhythmia. The heart was not beating at either the right rhythm nor the right speed and was making the blood pressure crazy, the oxygen not there. And so I did exactly what I would do here together with the nursing staff. You know, we put in an IV, we did an ECG, we figured out what was going on, we found out whether there was a heart attack happening, whether there was damage to the cardiac muscle. When we saw that it was an arrhythmia, there's a medication that can slow that heart rate. We contacted EMS, I phoned a tertiary care center, and they were transported there. So it's the same thing, except I'm, you know, by video from Winnipeg, caring for a needy person in Newfoundland.
Bergen says the system takes some getting used to for his patients and for him.
It is kind of novel and a little bit, kind of cutting edge stuff that we're not used to. And so, they look and they say, you know, where are you? And I say, I'm in Winnipeg. And they say, wow, I'm going to get medical care from across the country. And then when we pull out the stethoscope and they're for the first part, they think, oh my goodness, maybe just the nurse will listen and then tell me what he or she hears. And I say, I can hear you. I can see, we can figure this out together. And there's this wonder. I had an elderly woman the other day that said, I never thought I would live to see this kind of care. And then she said, and I think I'm quoting her, she said, thanks for caring, hun, and for being a doctor for us here on the Rock. And it just is such a privilege.
A privilege that includes gadgets that enable Dr. Bergen to use a remote stethoscope to listen virtually to his patient's hearts and lungs, and a virtual otoscope that enables him to look inside his patient's ears. Still, the tech isn't perfect.
There's always challenges in every situation, and this one is no different. Technology is wonderful when it works and frustrating when it doesn't. Depending on coverage, sometimes the stethoscope or the otoscope, the tools that I use to listen and to see the patient, they cut in and out. And there have been times when I can hear a little bit, but then I have to say to the nurse, this is what I heard. Confirm, is that what you've also heard? So there's some of that. I think the biggest frustration I have would simply be, I think, because of kind of my personality, I like to be hands-on. I like to be with the patient. And in 85% of the ways, I am with the patient, but I can't reach out and physically assess. And I do find that frustrating. But like I said, there's partners on the ground that can do that for me. And together we care for the patient.
Bergen wishes that access to care in general was better.
I guess the biggest frustration would be the same as I have here. The need is greater than the resources. And, everyone's time, you have 24 hours a day and no more. And we can only do so much. And I hate to hear at the Victoria Hospital leave patients in the waiting room. Sometimes the patients that are in there in the waiting room when I start my shift are still there when I leave my shift. And in similar fashion, while the waiting room is not as extensive in Newfoundland, we're not meeting all the need that we could. I would suggest that we need to, as innovative as this is, we need to continue to tweak and modify, because accessibility and universality are really important in caring for people in ways that they need.
Even if Teladoc physicians are based outside of the province, they still have to register with the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Newfoundland and Labrador and the Medical Association. The rules also state that their pay be in line with what local doctors make. We'll be right back.
From CBC Podcasts and the Fifth Estate, Brainwashed is a multi-part investigation into the CIA's experiments in mind control. From the Cold War and MKUltra to the so-called War on Terror, we learn about a psychiatrist who used his patients as human guinea pigs and what happens when the military and medicine collide. Listen to Brainwashed on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Black Art. This week, Newfoundland and Labrador hired the private firm Teladoc Health to provide publicly funded virtual primary care to the growing number of unattached patients in the province. From the moment the province announced the Teladoc program last November, there have been critics. Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association President Dr. Gerard Farrell said Teladoc has been tasked with providing a quick solution to a crisis in primary care that was decades in the making. Nurses have also been critical of Teladoc. Yvette Coffey is president of the Registered Nurses Union of Newfoundland and Labrador. Yvette Coffey, welcome to White Coat Black Art.
Thank you for the invite.
We're here to talk about Teladoc, and Teladoc is filling in on two areas, primary care and virtual ER, emergency department coverage. I want to start with family doctors first. How would you describe the primary care situation in Newfoundland and Labrador to Canadians who don't live there?
So here in Newfoundland and Labrador at the present moment, we have approximately 50 plus thousand residents who do not have access to a primary healthcare provider, be it a family physician or a nurse practitioner. We have been very actively recruiting. Our government has been recruiting worldwide. We have currently 715 nursing vacancies here in this province. So, and other healthcare provider vacancies as well. So what we do have here is the perfect storm.
So why do you think the province turned to Teladoc to fill in on primary care, to try to fill that gap?
That's a really good question. And I would say it's a multi-pronged answer. One is they don't want to listen to the solutions that are being brought forth by the Registered Nurses Union, by the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association and other healthcare providers. We need to be looking at retention. We do have nurse practitioners and family physicians who are willing to do this virtual care on top of their already busy clinics, but because of this contract, they're not able to provide that extra coverage that they normally would have. I'm not saying that it would fully cover the lack of primary healthcare providers, but we're not utilizing what we have.
I guess some might raise the concern that if you did open up that Teladoc option to providers already in Newfoundland and Labrador, that that might attract so many of them that it would detract from in-person care. Is that a valid concern?
I do think it's a valid concern. I mean, one of the things that happened through COVID was having access to not only a primary healthcare provider, but if they did have a primary healthcare provider, the lack of access to in-person care and something that might have been picked up on if they had to have an in-person visit with a primary healthcare provider during those 3 years and could have been managed, they're now having major side effects from having not been seen in person and not been diagnosed earlier.
So things like eye problems and chronic kidney disease coming from diabetes, just as that one example.
As one example, yep.
What are some of your other concerns about virtual primary care as currently provided by Teladoc?
So I am hearing from our registered nurses on the ground who work in the areas where virtual care through Teladoc is being provided. There is time being spent trying to work out the technological challenges. Sometimes they go in and a camera is not working, or the microphone is not working, or the virtual stethoscope, or appointments were not entered correctly, or there's not a physician available, or you know, one of the biggest concerns from registered nurses is there's nobody laying hands on these patients except for them. And their fear is they're going to miss something. It will be come back to haunt them kind of thing. And everybody here is of the same mind. And even the government has said it. The best care is in-person hands-on care, where you can actually talk to your patient, put your hands on and do a thorough assessment of them. And the fear is that things are still being missed because of virtual care.
But we have heard some good comments about Teladoc. Some patients like it. We heard from one of the mayors of a small community who says their local emergency department was on diversion or temporary closure for months before Teladoc came in due to staffing shortages. And now they've been able to stay open, albeit on using a virtual model. What do you think of that?
That's one of the areas I'm hearing from registered nurses where there are locums who have offered to go and do locums there and have been turned away and told they weren't needed, only to find out registered nurses go to work and there is no locum. They're actually doing virtual care with Teladoc. So the trust in the system is about, are we going to utilize the people we have here in Newfoundland and Labrador, or are we giving preference to Teladoc because we now have a big contract signed with them? When you had no access, you know, to go to your point about rural communities and being positive about it, you'll take anything. Anything is better than nothing. But we still believe the exception should be virtual, that in-person care is still our gold standard.
Do you think it's possible that Teladoc moving in might be having an adverse effect on physician and nurse recruitment and retention in some of those rural areas that you were talking about?
Having them move in erodes our publicly funded healthcare system, and it erodes the trust in the care that we are providing. And it, you know, it's disrespectful to the people who are here trying to maintain their system, trying to care for the people of Newfoundland and Labrador. The money that they're being paid is substantially higher than what our people that are working in the public health care system are getting paid here in our public health care system. And Teladoc is just another example of privatization of our publicly funded healthcare system. You know, we can say all we want, yeah, it's because we have a lack of primary healthcare providers. Well, there's other options here. And we're not exploring those other options. We're going with the option that's, they think it's a quick win, when in actual fact, in the long term, these patients that are only being seen for like 5 or 10 minutes on a video or on a phone call are not getting the care that we need to change healthcare in Newfoundland and Labrador and to change the health outcomes.
Well, Yvette Coffey, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Another recent concern has to do with the security of virtual healthcare records. The province's Information and Privacy Commissioner, Michael Harvey, said in March that his office is carefully monitoring the Teladoc situation. That's after a class action lawsuit filed in New York earlier this year alleges that Teladoc shared sensitive health information with Facebook for the purpose of targeted advertising. Teladoc Health told us in an email that it doesn't comment on pending litigation, but said when it comes to relevant Canadian privacy laws, it doesn't provide member information to Meta or any other social media platform. Fiona Clement has heard those kinds of criticisms and more. She's an associate professor and director of the University of Calgary's Health Technology Assessment Unit.
Fiona Clement, welcome back to White Coat Black Art.
Thank you, Brian. Excited to be here.
You've had a chance to read about some of the work that Teladoc is doing in Newfoundland and Labrador, and I wanted to know, what's your feeling about the role of virtual primary care? Let's talk about that first, then we'll get into virtual emergency coverage in a moment.
Well, great question. I'm quite excited to see virtual primary care sort of rolling out, I suppose. I am a little worried, too. The things that excite me about it are the idea that a patient could connect with a physician virtually as opposed to having to travel in to a site that is potentially far away, or even if it's close to home, you don't have to deal with the parking and the driving, to be able to connect with your doctor from the comfort of their own home, get high quality medical care. So I'm excited about that part of virtual care. What worries me about it is the idea that virtual care is the solution for everything.
What do you make of the fact that Newfoundland and Labrador has negotiated a 2-year contract with Teladoc? What does that tell you?
Well, so I'm glad it's short term, and I think it gives, hopefully, the province an opportunity to gather some data, really understand how this is addressing or not addressing the lack of primary care within the province, and to not get locked into something that's too long, that then if it doesn't work out, the province really can't exit without a big financial exposure.
Teladoc is private. What does that mean to you in terms of the delivery of publicly funded healthcare services in a province like Newfoundland and Labrador?
So many of the services that people have are delivered by private delivery services. So I think there are spaces where we already have that well in place. What worries me about it is the numerous examples we can point to where a private company is delivering a service with very little accountability, very little oversight. And, you know, they are a private company. That means their primary responsibility is to their shareholders and to be profitable. And that's a very different accountability than a social accountability, which is what we would see in a publicly funded institution where they are accountable to taxpayers and to their individual patients.
I know that you know that there are provinces like Newfoundland and Labrador are desperately trying anything in the short term to get patients seen by a doctor or a nurse practitioner. This sounds a bit like short-term thinking when the problem is a much more long-term problem of lack of supply of those primary care providers. How concerned are you that this kind of a band-aid would become a substitute for the fundamental changes that need to be made or the fundamental improvements that need to be made to increase the supply of those primary care providers?
Yeah, I think that is a real worry in that investing in this, you know, band-aid solution is exactly the right terminology, I think, to address the lack of primary care physicians right now, that this, I mean, this is a solution that can be implemented very quickly. But the longer term solution and what I would like to see longer term is that we actually have primary care physicians in communities that need them. And, you know, I worry that by having this band-aid solution in place, the government will take their eye off some of those longer term solutions and actions that need to happen to be able to, in, you know, a 10-year time frame, have primary care physicians in real life in these communities that desperately need it.
And what would you say Newfoundland and Labrador needs to be doing to address those concerns down the road to increase the supply of nurse practitioners and primary care physicians?
Yeah, so it's a very multi-pronged approach that's required. So we do know that training more physicians and nurse practitioners will increase the supply. And importantly, we need people who are undertaking medical school or nursing to pick primary care as their specialty. There are many, many other options for physicians and nurses about how they want to set up their practice. And family medicine needs to shift out of sort of the bottom slot, if you will, in terms of preferences for students when they're training. And that's a really multi-pronged thing because we know that the experiences that students have when they train, if they spend time in rural communities and enjoy that, or if they are themselves from rural communities and they have that connection and that sense of rural living and attachment to the community already, both of those things mean that they're more likely to uptake family medicine in rural communities. So we need to focus on numbers coming in, how we're training them. And then the other important piece is to stay in a rural community, they need to see a life there. And so that includes things like opportunities for a partner to have a job that's rewarding, schooling for kids, if that's what their life entails, thinking about some of the recreational opportunities that might or might not be there. And so we're talking about placing physicians in communities that are really thriving communities. So there's something here for every different ministry portfolio. It's a really multi-pronged effort to get this problem addressed.
How do you think provinces can best assess whether these virtual care platforms are actually giving patients the care they need? What should they be doing?
So I think this needs a really keen focus on strong data that is very multifaceted. So of course, we need to keep our eye on clinical outcomes. And by that, I'm thinking of like perhaps what we might call hard clinical outcomes. So are there increases in heart attacks, strokes, adverse events, death rates, things like that. but then also some of those softer things like, you know, what is the patient experience? Are patients, do they feel like they're getting high quality care? Do they feel like they've got continuity of care? And then, of course, we need to keep our eye on costs and thinking about, you know, is this virtual care taking the place of a real life visit, or is this virtual care happening and a real life visit is happening as well, in which case you want to really think about why do we have this middle step? So I think a really robust, evidence-informed, data-driven accountability plan needs to be in place. And that needs to happen repeatedly. We can't wait 2 years and then take action. I would love to see some kind of, you know, 6-month check-in again at the year, and some kind of link to whatever is found in that data, that a system, that an adjustment is made if there are problems.
And finally, I want to bring it back to people who live in Newfoundland and Labrador. What if for them, virtual primary care is the only answer that they're likely, the only solution that they're likely to have for now for the next few years?
I feel sad for those communities, Brian. Hopefully some care is better than no care. But I do feel really sad for the communities that this will be their only way to get healthcare. Because again, we know that so much of healthcare, in particularly in primary care, is about the relationship that you have with your provider and that the provider has with the community more broadly. And so, I mean, again, I hope that some care is better than no care, but I really do feel sad for those communities. And for them, I, again, would underscore the government needs to keep moving on those bigger, longer term solutions that are needed from a policy lens to see that in the future, perhaps physicians in real life will be living in and building their practices in these communities.
Fiona Clement, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Virtual care is more convenient than in-person care, and it's quicker and easier to provide on short notice. But proponents and critics alike agree that the more permanent and effective solution is to find more people willing to provide primary care in person where people live. In the meantime, Fiona Clement says provinces that are turning to virtual care need to demonstrate its effectiveness. It's hard to disagree with that. That's our show this week. If you'd like to comment, our email address is whitecoat@cbc.ca. Whitecoat Black Art was produced this week by Stephanie Dubois with help from Jennifer Warren and Samir Chabra. Our digital producer is Ruby Buiza, and our senior producer is Colleen Ross. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.